Welcome back to Type 1 Takes, a podcast for all things type 1 diabetes and health. I am Arisha, your host, and a type 1 diabetes advocate who has had type 1 diabetes for almost a decade. And today's episode is going to be extra special because we are joined by a truly inspiring guest. I am happy to introduce Mr. Scott Benner, a powerhouse in the type 1 diabetes community, and he runs Behind Juicebox Podcast. Throughout our episode, we will talk about personal journeys, impact, awareness, and support. So without further ado, let's get started. Okay, so since you are a really big influencer in the type 1 diabetes community, would you like to further introduce yourself?
Right behind me. It's too bright. Ah, it's so much better. Okay. I'm Scott. How are you, everybody? Hi. This is weird. I'm not usually on other people's podcasts. Who am I? Okay. Well, I have a type 1 diabetes podcast that I'm told is very popular by you. It's very nice. I don't think of it that way, I guess, most days. How do I think about it? Well, so my daughter is going to be 20 in a couple of months. Her name is Arden, and she was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes a couple of weeks after her second birthday. And, I mean, it was very shocking to us, obviously, and it was, you know, 18 years ago. The management at that point was fast-acting insulin, a basal insulin, pretty, you know, what would be considered older basal insulin now, like Levemir, Lantus. We got needles and a small meter, and that was pretty much it. Told to count carbs. This was her ratio. You know, don't correct high blood sugars. It's okay if she's high. That was pretty much the whole thing. And I was a stay-at-home father at that time and had been for a while. So if Arden was 2, that would be 2006. I became a stay-at-home dad at the very end of 1999 when my son was born. So I'd been doing that for a while. I was unprepared for diabetes. I didn't know anything about it. And in the course of just a couple of months, I very quickly came under the idea that I was killing her, that I didn't know what I was doing. She'd already had a seizure once from using too much insulin. She only weighed like 18 pounds. And her A1C was in the high 8s. And I did not know what I was doing. But I guess the way this all started was about 9 months into Arden's time with type 1 diabetes, I decided to try to get people to donate money to the JDRF. And I called people, I explained diabetes. I literally did it the way, you know, before the internet kind of thing. I think I raised a couple thousand dollars from a bunch of different people, you know, collectively. And then I remember just feeling very disappointed that I raised $1,500 or something like that. And so the following year, I think on Arden's, almost on the anniversary of Arden's diabetes, maybe, I started writing a blog about it. And that's, it probably sounds quaint now in 2024, but back then there were no real blogs. That wasn't a real thing. I did later find out there were probably 3 diabetes blogs before mine, but I had one of the very first ones as far as I know. And, it wasn't like now, like you didn't know how many people were clicking on your blog. Like everything's so data driven now, like, you know, how many likes you get on an Instagram post. But back then I just had a blog. And a month or so into writing on this blog, this lady sent me an email from the UK. And she said, hey, you know, your blog is helping me. And I almost didn't even know I had a blog. I just was sharing stuff. You know what I mean? I just was writing a diabetes blog. But a few years into it, I realized that they'd become really popular. As a matter of fact, at one point, there were over 4,000 diabetes blogs. And I'd go see what other people were writing sometimes, and to me, it just felt like they were all saying the same thing. Felt like different writers saying a different version of the same thing. And that made me feel like I was wasting my time, because there were better writers than me, and I figured they're saying what I'm going to say anyway. I stopped doing it for a little bit, but I found myself missing it. And so I kind of reorganized and came back at it. Instead of just what I would kind of consider like raw nerve sharing, like, you know, this thing happened, I'll write about it real quick. And then having everybody kind of run in and say, oh, I felt like that before. And you get that sameness feeling, which is nice and comforting, but doesn't really take you out of your moment. It just sort of like, you know, you get that like, oh, I'm not alone feeling, which is terrific. But then nothing happens from there. You're still alone at 2 o'clock in the morning when somebody's blood sugar is low or something. So I kind of pivoted a little bit and I started talking more about how I manage Arden's diabetes. Now, in the beginning, that wasn't anything you'd want to mimic because I didn't know what I was doing. But eventually Arden got a, she had a pump. We got her a pump when she was four because we didn't want her to go to kindergarten without a pump. And that wasn't because, you know, you're going to ask me one question. I'm going to talk for a whole hour, right? You have to stop me if you want me to stop.
No, I think this is great.
So we got her a pump, not because we wanted like all the functionality of a pump. And, you know, I didn't even know about it. I didn't know it enough to understand that there would be temp basal, you know, and extended boluses and things like that. I just didn't want a person I didn't know giving my daughter a shot in a school nurse's office. That's pretty much the whole reason we got her a pump. So we got her a pump. Then a couple years later, this lovely woman who used to write a blog, she's like, do you know about this Dexcom thing? And she was telling me. I was like, I don't know what that is, you know? And then I didn't think of it again. And then we were at the endo's office and they said, do you want to get one of these Dexcom things? I'm like, I don't know what that is. So the way the nurse explained it to me was that she had this like young man in her practice. I think he was like 17 years old. He was very excited to get a CGM because every time he ate M&Ms, his blood sugar went up. And he thought if he could see his blood sugar, he might be able to stop it. And she told me that he got a CGM, put it on, ate his M&Ms, watched his blood sugar. Then the next time he put in a little more insulin and he got less of a spike. And he kept doing this, like day after day, eating this amount of M&Ms and changing the amount and the timing of his bolus. Until one day he ate the M&Ms and his blood sugar didn't go up and it didn't get low. And she just told me that story just very quickly. And I thought, I bet you if he could do that with M&Ms, I could do that with everything. That was sort of it. So I got Arden a CGM. And now she had a pump and a CGM. So I thought the pump at first, like getting a pump was going to bring her A1C down. And it did, but it got it into the sevens. I think all it really helped with was the anxiety of like shooting insulin for corrections. Like, because she was so little, like, it felt weird to go up to her and be like, I'm going to bump your blood sugar with a half unit and I got to poke you for it. So we got it down like a percentage point, I think, from like the eights to the sevens. But then when I could start seeing the CGM and manipulating the insulin, then it all just took off. Like once her A1C started to drop, I almost couldn't stop it. It was like seven, mm-hmm. You know, 7.5. It was 7. It was 6.8. It was, I just kept, every time we went in every 3 months, it would go down and down and down. And then I started writing about that. So I started to have like these real ideas, like do this with insulin, pre-bolus, a meal, you know, put some in now and some in later. And I started coming up with all these like weird terminologies. Like I was like, you can bump your blood sugar or nudge it with this. And, you know, like, you know, try an extended bolus and started talking a lot about.
So what insulin pump did she have like at the time?
She had the original Omnipod. Arden has only ever worn an Omnipod. She's had, she's either had syringes or an Omnipod. She's never even had an insulin. So anyway, I started writing about it like that. And then before you know it, the blog got really popular. And what I realized was, is that I had a system. I didn't have a name for it. I didn't call it anything. I never wrote it down like in bullet points or anything like that. But I knew there were these handful of ideas. And if you did them over and over again, your A1C would be in like the high fives or the low sixes. Like that's just what it was, you know? And so I wrote that blog for a while. And then I think in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, a friend of mine wrote a book about diabetes. She was a fellow blogger. I don't think she does it anymore, so I won't say her name. But she wrote a book about diabetes and she asked me to write a sidebar in her book. So I wrote like 1,000 words for it. And gosh, like months later, her publisher called me and said, "We really liked your 1,000 words. Would you write a book for us? We'd like you to write a book." And I was like, "Oh my God, I'd love to write a book." And she's like, "About diabetes." And I said, "Oh, I don't want to write a book about diabetes." And she asked me why. And I said, "Because I don't have it perfected yet. Like I felt weird to me to put it in writing and print it. Do you know what I mean? Like on the internet, it's different. Like it goes away. But like, I don't know if people think that you write a book and you make a bunch of money. That's not what happened. I think I was paid $5,000 to write the book. I started off, I mean, I had a bit of an unfair launch because I had a pretty popular blog still. But the first year of my podcast was 2015. I started it right away in January. So I had the whole year. And I did slightly over 25,000 downloads.
That's crazy.
In that year. Now you hear that number and you're like, that's insane, right?
25,000 downloads compared to like YouTube Shorts, TikTok views, and Insta Reels is actually a lot more, which makes it even crazier.
The podcast downloads are, a podcast download means more than a YouTube view, because first of all, nobody's really watching those YouTube videos all the way through. And like, even I think TikTok numbers are meaningless. And just like, and Instagram, it's like, oh, tap, tap. And most of the time you tap, tap because you know the person, you feel weird about not liking their picture. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, okay, here. But I don't know that that builds a real connection. And like, you called me an influencer at the beginning. Like, I don't think of myself that way, although I guess technically I am. But the way I think of this is I figured out this thing to do and it worked for my daughter. And I thought, I bet you this will work for other people. And then it did. And then I watched it work through writing. And then I watched it work through talking. And then I watched it work in mass. And then the mass got bigger and bigger and it kept working and working. And I thought, I've got it. This is enough of the secret to get people going. Like, do I know everything about diabetes? I don't. I don't even have diabetes. How crazy is that? Like, I'm not like, I have the most popular diabetes podcast in the world.
Yeah, that's
right.
Crazy.
I might have the most popular diabetes platform in the world. You know, I don't have diabetes. Somebody yelled at me about it on Instagram the other day. I was like, I don't know what to tell you. So, I'm seeing it help these people. And then I started really thinking about like, how do you expand that? How do you reach more people? How do you simplify the message so everyone can pick it up and use it? How do you talk about these seemingly either complex or boring topics and make them something that someone will actually listen to? Like, to me, that's my job, right? My job is to trick you into taking care of your diabetes by saying some stupid crap while I'm interviewing somebody and then mixing in some really good ideas about type 1 at the same time, because no one's going to sit down and listen to the dictionary be read to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to stop talking now. Do you have questions? I'm so sorry. Okay.
What is the most difficult challenge that you have faced while dealing with someone with type 1 diabetes as a dad?
The most significant challenge is that you're dealing with a living person with their own thoughts and their own feelings. And even if you're trying to do the best thing for them physically and emotionally, they may not intersect with that well. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you know, when your mom tells you to, I don't know, like, go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be exhausted tomorrow. And then you're like, I'll stay up for 2 more hours, and you're exhausted the next day. And then instead of thinking, hey, my mom was right, I should have gone to bed, you're mad at your mom for mentioning it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know how that kind of works? Like that human interaction part. So that to me is the most difficult part about helping another person with diabetes, is that they may not want your help, or they may not be ready for it, or you could be wrong and that could piss them off, or they might not want to listen, or, you know, all this stuff that could happen. But you can't stop, right? Like if you were going to walk out into traffic and I said, Arisha, stop, and you're like, I'm not listening to him. I couldn't just go, oh, well, I tried. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would have to, like, do something to stop you from going into traffic. Now, in that, you know, in that example, I'll pull you back. You'll still be alive and we'll go our separate ways. But if you do that in this day-to-day management thing, you run the real risk of ruining your relationship and pissing people off to the point that you can't get back from it. And so I think the most difficult thing to do is to manage good health without ruining your personal relationship or hurting emotional well-being. And the only way to do that is to do it slowly, to think of it as a lifetime's worth of effort, not 5 minutes, or I want to have this all straight 6 months from now. Because there are some times that I say something to my daughter and she says no, or she ignores me. And I have to decide in that moment, is this important enough to push, or can I step back from this one? I think that is big picture the hardest thing.
What role do you believe that technology plays in type 1 diabetes, and what is your favorite piece of technology relating to type 1 diabetes?
Okay, that's easy. Like I told you, Arden started with needles and a meter. I don't even think it was an accurate meter. But now she's using Dexcom G7, and Arden uses a do-it-yourself algorithm called IAPS on a dash pump. So what is, so if you break it down and say the most important piece, I'm going to reject your premise of the most important thing and tell you why this stuff's important, because I can't pick one most important thing. If I did, I'd say the CGM. The CGM is the most important thing if you can only have one thing, because you can see direction and speed, impacts of food, impacts of insulin. You can make different decisions that will come out better. You're very much like less likely to get low, be in a bad emergency, that kind of stuff. So CGM is the most important, but coupling it with an algorithm-based pump is like next level stuff. Like that's the difference between, I don't know, that's the difference between like a firecracker and like shooting a rocket to Mars. You know what I mean? So everything an algorithm does, if you go back and listen to the podcast in the beginning, it's the stuff I was doing before algorithms existed. I was taking away basal, adding basal, you know, doing a temporary basal increase of 150% to knock down a high blood sugar. You know, oh my God, I think she's going to get low 45 minutes from now. Temp basal 10% for 40 minutes. Like I was doing all that very successfully in keeping Arden's blood sugars very stable. Well, the algorithms are doing this for you now. And so not only are you seeing stability that is much, much less varied, you're seeing fewer spikes, fewer drops. You can sleep at night pretty safely and soundly. And you're seeing people getting A1Cs. They're coming by the numbers, honestly. No, there's not as much of these A1Cs in the sixes. But when you go back and look at, you know, the graph, they were 400 half the day and 60 half the day. And it averages out to a 6 A1C. Like that's not healthy. And that's not really a 6 A1C. I mean, it is, but it's not what you're looking for. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's that right there. I think it's the algorithms. So it's the algorithms and the CGMs, the marriage between them. They are going to propel people through the next 20 years of type 1 diabetes and keep a lot of people healthy. You're going to, like, you listen to the podcast. Like, you know that I have people on all the time that are talking about, you know, different health issues they're having. You know, sometimes the longer ago, you want to think the longer ago that they were diagnosed, the more likely they are to have health issues. But it's far less about when, and it's really just about how much insulin they were using. So even if they were regular in MPH and they've had diabetes for 40 years, if they were lucky enough to get an aggressive doctor who was aggressive with those like measurements, and they maybe weren't eating like really like crazy carby foods. I've talked to people who've had diabetes for 40 or 50 years and have a damn thing wrong with them. I've talked to people who've had it for 10 years who already have clouds in their eyes. You know, like I have a black spot in my eye, I had to get needles, blah, blah, blah. When you really pick through their story, they didn't use their insulin well. It's always about not covering the food correctly, like no matter what the story is. But I think that's going to happen less and less moving forward with these algorithms. That's my goal, my hope.
Yeah. I'm so excited when like Dexcom and Omnipod collaborate more and it's one device.
You think it's going to be one device? See, I don't think it is ever going to be one device.
I see things that are getting through the FDA. Well, they're applying through the FDA. It's one device. It's not Omnipod or Dexcom.
It's
It's just
one
like
company though, right?
yeah,
Yeah,
one.
so
Yeah.
I don't imagine that two different companies will make a combo device
Yeah.
unless there's something about the business and the FDA of it that I don't understand. But I'm not to say another company couldn't figure it out, but I don't see like a Dexcom and an Omnipod going, "Hey, what's that two great tastes that taste great together? Reese's peanut butter cups." That kind of thing. Like I don't think they're going to be like, "I've got the peanut butter, you've got the chocolate. Let's make a new product." I think they're going to say, "You make an algorithm, I'll make the CGM." They'll work together, but they're separate together.
It's because Dexcom can be used by a variety of people, like people with type 2 diabetes, and people can use it temporarily, while like the Omnipod can only be used like for people with type 1 diabetes, and it's like there's so many other pumps.
Well, I know there are type 2s that use Omnipod.
Really?
Yeah, sure. If they need insulin, they can use it. I see that. I see it's all. A lot of it ends up being about insurance distinctions and what gets covered and what doesn't get covered and that kind of stuff. Like you see, Dexcom just announced the Stelo. That's going to be, I think it's a 15-day wear CGM for type 2s. Yes, for type 2s. And it won't have like all the alerts and the alarms, but I just put out an episode about it. But it's built on the G7 platform. It's the same thing with like slightly different software. I think that's going to be cash only at first until they can try to get people to cover it, insurance companies to cover it. I think that it's not technology, but I think that one of the next leaps you're going to see for people with type 1 is GLP medications. Like
What
I,
is
so like Ozempic or Mounjaro, those things. Okay, so they're, I guess. I think the general public would think of them as weight loss medications. They're the reason that Oprah and Mindy Kaling are thin. Like, you know what I mean? They're the reason I'm thin, by the way. Yeah, but I think that's what the public mainly understands about them is that they make you full and you don't eat as much. But I'm interviewing now so many type ones who are using it either off label or they're getting it through Canadian pharmacies or stuff like that. Like a lot of different ideas are paying cash for it. A lot of times, like their doctors are like, "Look, I'll prescribe it, but your insurance isn't going to cover it." They're laying out like $1,300 a month for an insulin for a pen of this stuff. But you should see what it's doing for some people, not everybody, but for a lot of people. I interviewed a woman the other day. Her 15-year-old daughter went from something like 70 units of insulin a day down to 7. Right? She's a type one. And it's probably not going to stay like that forever, but holy hell, you know what I mean? My daughter is shooting a half a unit of a half a milligram, half a milligram, yeah, 0.5 milligrams of Ozempic a week, and her insulin needs have gone down significantly.
Really?
Yeah, so insulin needs go down. You're seeing a lot of people use it for PCOS symptoms, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So ladies having trouble in there. I'm sorry, this Zoom thing keeps doing the
The thumbs
thumbs up
up.
thing. I put my hand down so that doesn't happen. You're seeing it for that. I see like colloquially online, people talk about how they think it's helping their connective tissue problems. Like there's so many different people saying, "I think I'm seeing a benefit from this." For me, like you've known me for like a year and a half now, right? Like
Yeah.
look, do you see how much thinner I look? You can say. Can you say? You won't embarrass me. You can say, right?
I don't remember though, because I
Yes,
like
I'm so handsome. It's hard to tell. But I get what you're saying. Like fat or thin, I look. I started in March of 2023, and it's February 2024, and I've lost 45 pounds in like 12, less than 12 months, fewer than 12 months. You're gonna see type ones using this more. You are going to see it being covered by insurance companies moving forward. You're going to see like type ones getting a pen of this, and you're going to work it out with your doctor. Like, I'm going to try a quarter. I'll try a half a milligram. Let's see how much I can use. And it's not going to just be about not eating. It's going to be about insulin being used more efficiently. And by the way, when people have type 1 diabetes, they amylin is a problem. So like you hear a lot of type ones talk about insatiable hunger all the time, right? I can never feel full and I'm hungry all the time, and et cetera. Like your pancreas does more than just make insulin. And so some people have problems with digestive issues because of the what's happened to their pancreas. Obviously they can't make insulin, or insulin's not being used correctly, or whatever's happening in there. And then also hunger. So you could inject this. Okay, that makes sense too. So anyway, I think you're going to see GLP medications help people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And it's already helping people with type 2 diabetes. But I think you're going to see it help people with weight. I think you're going to see it help them with type 1, with type 2. There's a lot of stories of women who have had PCOS, haven't been able to get pregnant their whole lives, who are getting pregnant now using GLP medications. Like, I think it's going to be a big part of how people manage diabetes moving forward. So while it's not technology, I do think it's going to be impactful. So these algorithms, a little bit of a medication to cut back on your needs and you know, slow your eating down, and like all this other stuff that's going to be valuable for people. I mean, diabetes could end up looking very, very much different in a very short amount of time. So
yeah,
that's all. That's what I have. You got more questions?
Okay.
If you had the opportunity to tell your past self something, what would it be and why?
I can definitely tell you what I would tell my past self. I mean, you're not just talking about like what stocks I would tell him to buy. that's not what you're talking about. Because I'd say get some of that Apple stock. When a crazy guy says he's going to make an electric car, hurry up and buy a bunch of stocks. stuff like that. Let's see. What would I give my past? You mean about diabetes specifically?
Yeah.
What would I tell myself about diabetes specifically? Well, I spent a lot of years not knowing how to use insulin and how it worked. And I think if you really listen to me talk about diabetes, it's really all I'm telling you. I'm just telling you there's a right amount of insulin to use and the right time to use it. And once you get that straight, the rest of it works out pretty well. So I would probably tell myself timing and amount, you know, and pay a lot of attention to the different impacts of different foods. Don't be so scared of activity. I'd probably tell myself, hey, no active insulin while she's exercising. That there's one like took me years to figure out. You know, eventually Arden could go off in the morning and I'd play softball like three games in a day in the sweltering heat, never get low. But before that, I had like active insulin going for food and she'd get low all the time. This horrible thing happened to her when she was playing one time. Like she was like out of it playing softball one time. And yeah, I would tell myself timing and amount, which I guess is honestly is still when we're talking about activity, it's amount and timing. Like don't have a bunch of active insulin while you're running around. Yeah, I would tell myself timing and amount. That is what I would say.
Okay.
I talk myself into it.
So do you have any strategies or resources that you found helpful in supporting the well-being and mental health in the type 1 diabetes community?
Yeah. Oh, I do. I have a lot of thoughts about this. Let me shift in my chair and get comfortable. So I don't know how long ago it was now, a handful of years. And I started getting a lot of notes from people that said, you should open up a Facebook group, private group, because we need a place to go talk about the stuff you're talking about in the podcast. And I, like, 100% honest with you, I did not want to do that. Because I did not want to be on Facebook. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be in charge of a Facebook group. That was my first thought. Like, I don't want to do that. My second thought was, what if it's a huge failure and I've started a Facebook group that, like, you know, takes 5 years to build up to 3,000 members or something like that? Like, I'll be embarrassed. Okay. You know what I mean? I was like, so these are my two reasons not to want to do it. I end up doing it because in the end, it's, I don't know if you know the saying, no skin off my ass. So like, it didn't matter. It didn't cost me anything to do, right? So I was like, I'll do it. So I put it up and it has like, you know, Facebook groups, like they have rules. My rule was don't be stupid or I'll close this thing. Like, that was the whole rule. That was all the rules. I was like, I don't want to deal with this, so don't cause me a problem. But anyway, now it's a handful of years later. It has 47,000 people in it. It does 125 new posts a day, 9,000 likes and comments. It adds 150 new people every 3.5 to 4 days. And it's bonkers. But I watch it help people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And here's how it does it. And this is the answer to your question. I don't know what it is about me. I could probably sit around and philosophize about it and come up with an answer, but there's something about the way I communicate that a lot of people are comfortable with. There's a way that I talk about diabetes that a lot of people can understand. I don't know why that is. It's not a thing I sat down and tried to do. As a matter of fact, I very recently, I don't want to out anybody. I very recently have started a new hobby. And I didn't know anything about it. It's a chameleon. And I didn't know anything about it, okay? And so I did what people do to find... It's like, well, how do people learn about diabetes? They come find me. There must be a guy like me about chameleons, is actually what I thought. Yeah. And it turns out there is. And I went and found this person. His information is rock solid. Really good. His communicating is clear. I don't love his style, but it doesn't matter. Because he's clear and he knows what he's talking about. And I listen to him and then I have what I need and I can move on. So there's something about the way you communicate that teaches people. So because now if you ask me about chameleons, what you're really going to hear is my interpretation of this man that I found. Right? Because mm-hmm. I don't have my own thoughts about it. I have his thoughts that I've repurposed for my reality. That's what happens with my podcast. Like, I tell my story about how I manage diabetes. Then I bring on other people to tell their stories about how they manage their diabetes. Mm-hmm. Those stories get combined together in kind of a primordial goo that everyone listens to. And then you filter out of it what you need, what works for you. And now when you talk about diabetes, you're talking about diabetes through your lens and perspective, with everyone's stories behind you, kind of filling in your understanding. Well, when you put all those people together in a Facebook group, you get different but the same. So it's not a bunch of mindless drones just over and over again saying, Scott says this, Scott says that, like that kind of thing, right? It's them and everything that they've gotten out of the podcast refiltered through themselves. And then they jump in and help people where they can. So it feels to me like I've created 47,000 helpers. And then because it started with, like, I'd answer everyone's question. Mm-hmm. I can't do that anymore. I can't keep up with my own mentions. People tag me. I don't see it. My email is insane. My messages are insane. Like, I can't keep up with all that. Like, I'm making the podcast. My social media is two people's full-time job, and it's just me. So I don't do anything. But I have all these great people out there who are saying, hey, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but you should try episode 1010. Like, I heard about this in this pro tip series, and it was really mm-hmm. helpful to me. I don't know how to explain it to you now, but you can go hear it here. That support and the ability to get information at your pace and in your time is really important, right? It doesn't work going into a doctor's office because for a lot of reasons, mainly the doctor's probably a bad communicator, poor communicator, probably doesn't even know what they're talking about sometimes, right? It's a finite amount of time. You're nervous. You don't want to be there. It costs money. Like, there's a lot of reasons why it's not a comfortable situation. You get in there, you forget to ask something. A lot of people just start talking, like telling their stories in doctor's offices, not even leaving enough time for the actual questions. There's a lot of reasons why that model doesn't work for people. Mm-hmm. But you can listen to the Bold Beginnings series or the variable series, or the after dark, or the pro tips, or all the other stuff I've put together, you can listen to it at 2 o'clock in the morning if you want to, or while you're doing your dishes or driving at your time, at your pace. And everyone else who's been helped by it is kind enough to stick around online and show other people the way. So yeah. I think that's, I forget your, read me your question again. I'm having trouble buttoning this thought up.
Yeah, let me find it real quick.
Go ahead. Would you cross it out already?
I have a checklist.
I know you do. You know, I eat only, I can, certain kinds of yogurt now. I actually absolutely will only best fed like eggs and butter and beef and stuff because of you.
Did you try the Biomedic?
So for those of you who don't know,
Biomedic is?
Is a supplement from Purium that is designed to support the body's detoxification process. So since it has ingredients like chlorella and cilantro and some other herbs, these ingredients are believed to help remove like heavy metals and toxins from the body. And it's supposed to make you feel better, and it helps detoxify you and makes you feel less tired and less.
Listen, first of all, I feel fine. Like, my stomach's nice and calm. Like, it doesn't matter what I eat anymore. Like, I don't have, like, you know, I don't run to the bathroom if I eat something, like that kind of thing. Like, I don't know if people know that experience of being like, oh, I've got to go now. And, like, you know, like, I don't, none of that happens to me. My stomach's very calm. I don't feel bloated. But I only have certain kinds of yogurt now. I actually absolutely will only buy grass-fed like eggs and butter and beef and stuff because of you. So I've made
grass-fed beef is really good, like the tallow part for your skin, and it makes your skin more glowy. And I've noticed it on like eggs.
See? So I did some things you told me to do, and I'm very consistent about it. And when one time we ran out of grass-fed butter, and my wife tried to slip in regular butter, and I would not eat it until I went and got more grass-fed butter. She thought I was ridiculous. She's like, tell me again, a 14-year-old girl told you this? And I was like, yes, and I'm listening to her. So yeah, I did. Should I try the Biomed again? The Biomedic again? It's expensive. Oh, no, wait,
just take it. Just don't take it like every day. Take it like.
Where were you with this information the first time? Take it like what? Tell me. All right, I'm going to buy it again. This is expensive. I'm doing it right now. I'm getting one back. Yeah. All right, Arisha. Hold on a second. I'm typing in the wrong place. Do you have more questions for me? I could talk for like 7 more hours about me. I'm very interesting.
Okay, I'll ask one.
You asked me a question while I look at is it biomedic.com?
No. You have to go to Purium. And then on Purium, you have to go to Biomedic.
All right, hold on a second. Jeez.
But
go
basically,
ahead.
I would take it if you're going out somewhere that has like bad food.
Oh, like, I do that with digestive enzyme from Thorne Labs. If I eat a fatty or greasy or something like that, pop one of them in, everything's good to go.
Yeah, I would, because it's supposed to remove the glyphosate out of your body, and if you already are eating mostly organic and everything, you're probably fine.
All right. So what should I be doing like for like just overall good gut health? Like just a pro.
So what I would do to maintain a really good gut health would be to prioritize like balanced diet, like rich fiber, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and foods that support the beneficial gut bacteria, which is going to help a lot in probiotics, because probiotics treat on the bacteria that's in your gut. Like foods like sauerkraut also help introduce probiotics, and then also obviously like no stress, sleep, and regular exercise, and that's about it.
So, in your experience, what role do you believe that education and awareness plays in improving the lives of those with type 1 diabetes? No, you can take the awareness part out because you explained that already.
The education, it's everything. You can't, I mean, it's really genuinely everything. If I always say this in my private life. If I was on the Mayflower, we'd still be in Boston. Because I would have landed the first creek I got to, I would have been like, I don't know how to get to the other side of this. I guess this is where I live now. Do you know what I mean? Like those people who can like see and go, oh, I'll build a bridge here, or oh, I'll make a wheel or a wagon, or I bet I get that horse to pull this cart. Like those, I don't have that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't think beyond what I know about. And I think a lot of people fall into that category. I can figure things out, but it takes some, I'm smart. Sorry, there's a line from a movie I'm just thinking of, but we'll skip past that. I think that people need tools, and tools are information in this situation, right? Like, it's not really a hammer and a nail. It's not a bridge. It's an idea. You need to understand how to pre-bolus a meal. You need to understand the difference between eating 10 carbs of watermelon and 10 carbs of rice and 10 carbs of a potato and 10 carbs of bread, that these all are going to have slightly different impacts on your body. You need to understand that fat slows down your digestion. And when your digestion is slower, that glucose is leached into your blood slower over more time. So that your insulin that you're using may either make you low in the beginning because you haven't digested enough to hold up the insulin's impact, or the insulin will run out long before the impact of the foods run out. Things like this, you have to understand those things. When you understand those things, you have a toolbox full of ideas. I can bolus now for watermelon. I can bolus for a cheeseburger. A cheeseburger with fries is different. If I have a cheeseburger with a milkshake, it's different. If I, you know, like, it's once you have all those tools and you use them and use them again and again and again, they become commonplace, right? Like, I don't know, like, and the way I usually describe it to people is like, I'm in a room right now with the door closed. And at some point you and I are going to finish whenever I stop talking, God knows it could be hours from now. And I get up and I'm going to walk out of this room. I will not stand up and think, reach out for the doorknob, grasp it in your hand, push it down, pull. I'm just going to walk out the door. And all those little steps in between, they're going to happen automatically. Mm-hmm. And that happens with diabetes eventually. If you have the right tools, if you know the steps, and you practice them over and over, and you see them happen, just like a baby learning to walk, it's a little hinky in the beginning, and then one day the kid gets up and runs across the room, and they're not doing that thing with their arms anymore. You know what I mean? And like, oh, like I'm doing it. Like, right? It just happens. That happens with diabetes. You get the right tools. You get to practice with them. You have somebody that's willing to tell you that a mistake isn't a mistake. It's a learning experience. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, one day you stand up, you walk right out the door. You don't even remember grabbing the handle, and that's it. And to me, that's how people end up with stable blood sugars. They start with good information. Practice makes perfect. One day it just happens. And that's it. Yeah. And to me, that's the education it's the entire thing. It's education coupled with grace. And you need that, because you're going to mess it up a bunch of times. But as long as every time you mess it up, you step back, look what happened, and say, okay, I'm not mad at myself. I'm not disappointed. I used 4 units here. I did a 15-minute pre-bolus. I spiked to 150. I didn't get low later. So close. Maybe a 20-minute pre-bolus would have stopped the spike. Like, mm-hmm. I'll try it again. You know, like, it's just a little more, a little less, a little sooner, a little later. You're the boy in the M&M example, basically. And as long as there's the comfort and support to do that, and the tools, the knowledge of how, I think we can all figure this out. I mean, honestly, if I can figure it out, you're 14. Did you listen to this podcast to figure out how to take care of your diabetes?
I didn't listen to the podcast until I was like a little older.
Okay. Does it help you?
Yes.
Yeah. How did it help you?
One thing that I struggled with specifically was when I got the Omnipod 5, and that's why I really liked the episodes or interviews that you did with the Dexcom and Omnipod people that came on to it. And one thing that I learned was that you have to give a little extra insulin, because if you bolus, for example, if you're bolusing for an apple and you give a unit for an apple, you have to add your basal insulin onto it. Because the Omnipod, since it shows it's on board, it automatically lowers your basal. So I always add a little extra insulin onto it, if that makes sense. But you're not giving any extra insulin, because you're giving more bolus insulin, but your basal insulin goes down. And that's how it really worked for me. And
Yeah, because it works differently than you expect based on how you did it with a manual pump before.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's all, it, it's, and it's over. The one thing, I think the one thing that, like, if I stopped and told you what my job is, like I told you, it's to trick you into taking care of yourself by making entertaining content that also helps you with your diabetes. I think that's my job. But my job is also to, it's to see what you need and not, this is going to be convoluted. I think that a lot of content providers provide the content they think people want. And I think it's my job to give you the content that you need, whether you know you need it or not. Right? So yeah. I'm not here to make you feel good and say, and I'm also not right now trying to tell people, I'm not trying to come down on people, but a lot of content creators in diabetes and outside of diabetes, they're really just telling you what you want to hear. Right? Like,
yeah.
I could easily jump on and say stuff about like, oh my God, you know, I went out somewhere and somebody said something stupid to me about my diabetes and like to my daughter. And, you know, I'm so mad and get everybody pissed and like, you know, let it all like the post will blow up and everything. But I'm not into that. Like, I'm not into clickbaiting people. I'm not into, kind of going after their worst demons. I don't want a pitchforks and, you know, pitchforks and what's the when you light a thing on fire, a torch. I couldn't come up with torch, like you know what I mean. Like, I'm not trying to create a bunch of people who are like, oh my God, this company's bad, that's bad, how come insulin isn't free? Like, these are all reasonable ideas. None of them are going to help you get your A1C into the fives. Like, so I'm going to keep talking to people about how they can be healthier and happier and have better physical health and better mental clarity, because I think that's what's going to make you happy. And that's just my goal. Like, and I think, I don't tell people how to eat. I don't tell people to subscribe to being low carb or don't, like, listen, I don't think you should eat processed foods. I think it's a pretty obvious thing, right? If you're listening to this right now and you're like, I wish I had a Cheeto to put with a Dorito and then I was going to wash it down with some Mountain Dew, I think you're making a mistake. I also know, I get what you're saying. It tastes so good when you take a Cheeto and a Dorito and put it together. Like, I understand what you're saying. But I don't tell people not to eat any certain way. What I tell them is however you eat, what you need to know is the timing and the amount of your insulin. Because the rest of that's up to you. It's not my job to tell you the best way to eat. I don't know the best way to eat. I mean, like, I just got done telling you, like, my body doesn't even work right. Like, I could eat as good as I wanted to, and I was still heavy. Like, I think I have probably a GLP deficiency, because as soon as I started taking it, even before I was on a therapeutic dose of it, I was losing weight immediately. Like, right away. Like, I lost 4 pounds in the first 4 days. No kidding. And it was not because I didn't stop eating to the point where, like, I could eat fine in the first week. You didn't even notice you were on it the first week. So I think I have some sort of a GLP deficiency. I'm sure science will prove that out over time, you know, perhaps. But it's not up to me to tell people how to eat. It's not up to me to do anything. I just tell people, like, this is how I do it. This is how I raised my daughter. She's doing it now. She's 20 years old. She's at college. You and I have been talking for an hour. I haven't heard this phone beep. You know? So yeah. She's out there living. She's sick as a dog right now. Like, really sick. Like a head cold.
Does she live close to you guys?
She's 700 miles away from us at college.
So she doesn't come over on weekends?
No. No.
Really?
Yeah, we're up to the part now where she starts going, I think I should drop out and come home. And I'm like, you're going to be fine. 3 more weeks till the break. And, you know, like, she's actually, the way her school does it is crazy. She left a couple days into January. And she won't be back until June. So she's living in a concrete box for 5 months by herself with some other girls. But she's doing great. Her blood sugars are great. Her A1Cs are great. She's fine. If you think I've ever once sat my daughter down and been like, here's how diabetes works, I have not. If you think she's ever listened to my podcast, she has not. I guarantee you she has not. It's because we talk about it and the way we talk about it. And what you brought up earlier about, like, I don't force it on her. I'm not always like harping about it. We don't talk about diabetes all the time. Like there's been a couple of times in my life where I've sat her down and said, hey, this is important. Listen to this piece. We have to do this part, right? Mm-hmm. You need to pre-bolus your meals. You have to. Like that's a non-negotiable. But if she doesn't remember to pre-bolus her meal, I don't go, oh my God, Arden, you didn't pre-bolus your meal. Like, but I go, okay, hey, let's, you didn't pre-bolus. What happened happened. Let's get out of this without creating a low later.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Arden is not a person. If you've ever heard her on here, like she's not interested. Like she is a person who's not interested in diabetes. She just isn't, but she's very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she listened to me talk about it. So I think that's what's happening for other people listening to the podcast too.
So does she eat the food at the college or does she bring her own food to eat?
Well, the first year she did, and it was a unholy disaster. Her insulin needs went way up. She wasn't using the GLP then, which may have helped. But she was gaining weight, unhealthy. She looked unhealthy. She was using a ton of insulin. She was going through a pod like every 2.5 days, but she wasn't eating more. She was just eating the crappy food that was at the college.
Mm-hmm.
So after her freshman year, she said, the only thing I need is a place with a refrigerator and a stove so that I can cook for myself. And when she has time to cook for herself, I can see it in her insulin needs right away. Whenever she has to buy convenience foods, or like pre-made stuff, she uses more insulin. And whenever she cooks for herself, she uses less.
I'm
going to blow your podcast up. You're going to put your episode out and I'm going to tell all my people about it. We're going to see if we can get you a couple thousand downloads or something like that. Maybe
actually, somewhere.
Yeah, we'll blow it up.
Because right now, like in the beginning, it was only like 50, which is like family, friends, you know?
I understand.
And then right now it's like 180, 200.
Nice.
Which is like, it's okay, but it's like all time, you know? So it's not that great.
I think it's awesome. I'm a big fan of like starting a thing and building it and like being competitive with it. Like, I don't care if you get 10, you're like, oh, I bet you I can get 20. And you get 20, you're like, oh, I'm going to try to get 40.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Like, I'm right now, this is going to sound ridiculous. I'm super excited because my podcast is about to go over 16 million.
That's like, crazy.
But it's total downloads for 10 years. So it's not that, it's still crazy, but it's not that, it's less crazy, right? But I'm still excited by it. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get to 16 million. Like, that's so exciting. Yeah. Like, I'm like 100,000 away. Yeah. And the truth is like, I'll be there in like a week probably. But
yeah, like,
it's a different thing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I've been at this a really long time. Like I said, the first time I did it, like the first year, the entire year, 25,000 downloads. Like on a good day now, I do 25,000 downloads.
I know. That's still really good.
Yeah. So, but even that's even a testament to people, I mean, I don't want to shortchange myself. Like, I think I make a good podcast. I think it's valuable for people. I think it helps them. And
very well known, though, too. It's something that has helped me, my family, and other type 1 diabetics I know. So I'm really grateful about it. And a lot of my doctors, endocrinologists know. My school nurses know about it. And that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to hear my craziest being recognized as a podcaster stories?
Yeah.
One time I was on a bus. You know how you park in a parking lot at an airport and then they shuttle you over to the airport? Like if you're going to park for long-term parking. I was on a long-term parking bus and we were driving away and this woman jumps up and she's like, oh my God, stop. I left my keys in my car. And it's like the bus like came to a crazy stop and she's like, I'm sorry. And she ran out and went and got her keys. While she was gone, I realized her son was with her. And I don't know how old he was, but he looked like he was like in his late teens. And I thought he was embarrassed because his mom just like, you know, turned over the apple cart in front of everybody. And I looked at him and I was like, I embarrass my kids all the time. Don't worry about it. We all are fine with this. Like, I felt like maybe he was like felt weird that there were 20 of us in this bus looking at him like, hey, what's going on? We're trying to make a flight, you know? Anyway, he looks at me super strange and freezes and does not answer me. And I was like, what just happened? Like, did I offend him? Like, whatever. So I just kind of left him alone because I was like, oh, that did not go the way I expected. And then she gets back on the bus and she's like, I'm so sorry. And she literally goes around and apologizes to everybody on the bus. When she got to me, I said, it's no trouble. Then she froze and looked at me super weird. And I was like, what is happening? And she goes, oh, my God. And she looks at her son and looks back at me. And she goes, I love your podcast. And I went, what? I would have dressed nicer if I knew you were going to know who I was. But she knew me. He knew me from my voice and it freaked him out and froze him. And then she, the same thing. That happened. I once had a lady come at me from across an airport. Like, I could see her coming at me like a heat-seeking missile, right, across the airport. And I had my headphones on. And, like, at first I was like, this isn't about me. Like, don't think everything's about you, Scott. You know what I mean? So, like, I just kept my headphones on. I was listening to what I listen to all the time. It was probably some Metallica or something like that. And then I realized this lady's making eye contact with me. I'm like, oh. So I started taking my headphones off. I'm like, hey, how are you? And she goes, Scott. And I was like, yeah, like, who are you? And she starts telling me, mom, my daughter, like, you know, like, has diabetes and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, did you just come from the thing I spoke at? And she goes, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I flew in here to visit my daughter for the weekend. I just looked across the airport and saw you. I was like, that's nuts. But as crazy as that sounds, I was once at a gas station where somebody came up to me and was like, I love your podcast. I was in a Wawa. Do you know what a Wawa is? The convenience store. Like, I was checking out and this lady is like looking at me like, I know who you are. But the craziest time, no lie, I was on the highway on Interstate 95, just doing what everybody does on 95, going way too fast, just cruising along, trying to get from one place to another. And this car comes up next to me and settles in next to me. And I was like, what is happening? And they dropped back. And then he came up again. He looked me in the face. And I was looking at him. And he's looking at me. And I looked at him. And he goes, he points to himself. And then he makes a heart with his fingers. And then he points to me. And I was like, what is happening? And then he did it again. I love. And then I realized he wasn't saying you. He goes, your podcast. And I was like, God damn, I'm famous. was, in a really like D-level celebrity way. But yeah, guy was just driving down the road, like looked over. You know, you look at people when you drive by. Well, he looked over and went, that's the guy from the podcast I listened to. And that actually happened to me. It was really crazy. That'll happen to you one day, too.
Well, yeah, I hope.
1,000,000%. Well, so what do we need here? You got any friends with diabetes?
No.
You got to make a friend with diabetes that has a microphone.
I know one. I mean, I know people that have type 1 diabetes, but they're just not super interested in it. And they don't really enjoy talking about it. But the one person that might be interested will just...
He'll just start gossiping about everyone at school.
Oh. Well, you know what I mean? We don't want to do that. You think he doesn't have the temperament for it, maybe.
Yeah.
So, because I say to him... What you say to him is, hey, you want to do a podcast series with me? We'll do like a limited series. You and I will talk once a week for 2 months. And you'll make these small changes in your management that I suggest to you. That'll be you. And then we'll see if we can get your A1C to come down.
I'll ask him.
Do it. Why not?
Yeah.
I should do that. That's a good idea I just gave away. All right. If anybody wants to come on my podcast and do that, that'd be cool. By the way, can I do that? Do you mind if I do it too? It's a great idea. I can't believe I just gave a rock solid idea away to a 14-year-old podcaster. Hold on a second. So I have the same person. Let me make a note. Same person comes on once a week. We do a 20-minute check-in. And then we see if we can lower their A1C. That's a great idea. I'm doing that. Usually this is the part where I say, don't steal it, but you can steal it. Okay? All right. Yeah, you got to be consistent. You got to put something out all the time. You got to talk. It's a talking medium. You can't like, you can't not know what you think. You can't not know what to say next. You got to go. You know what I mean? Like, I swear to you, if you, I say this all the time. I've never actually proved it out, but if you gave me 3 random words, I could build a story around them. You need to be able to talk, you know what I mean? And make sense and be expressive and emotive. And, you know, you got to draw people in. That's why, and then trick them into taking care of their diabetes. That's all. You can do it. You're a very smart kid. You're one of the only people I've had on my podcast more than once.
Really?
Yeah. Never again, though. I feel like you're going to take me over.
No.
I am booked out till November right now. It's February. There's like not an open slot till November. But that's it's what you got to do. Like I put out 5 episodes a week. So,
you know. I know. I see one every single day.
Damn right. That's content creating right there. I like these people who are like, there's this. I would never badmouth anybody. Okay. I mean, I would, but I'm not going to. But there's these people. I'm sure they're lovely. I don't know them. I've never listened to their podcast. I just love that they've been doing it for like 3 calendar years. And they're like, we're in season 10. I'm like, I'm sorry, I almost cursed. Like, what does that mean? So they'll do like 8 or 9 disjointed episodes. And then they'll stop for a few months and say, that was season 1. And then they'll come back a couple months later and do 8 or 9 episodes. And they're like, that was season 2. And I'm like, I call that a week. I don't know what you're talking about. That's not a podcast. That's a hobby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think, who are the big ones right now? You listen to any other podcasts?
Not really.
You think the guys at Smartless are about to take off a couple of months? They're not. They're going to pump out episodes like their life depends on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People love those. I'm looking here. Smartless, 219, 212, 25, 129, 122, 115, 18. They put out a podcast every week like clockwork. You know what I mean? Joe Rogan going to put out 4 episodes this week. He ain't messing around. Howard Stern will just come on the radio on Monday the 1st and then not come back again until the next week. He's on the radio every day giving you content. He knows you can't listen to it all, but it's there for somebody. So here, I'll give you a little bit of podcasting advice.
Okay.
Your episode is not precious. Do you understand? Like, I see people, they'll say like, well, I put one out on Thursday and then I'm going to put another one out in 2 weeks to give my listeners time to hear that. Nobody cares about your podcast. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care that much. Being a podcast listener is a lot about building, it's like everything else, right? Like it's about having a system. Like I get up in the morning, I take a shower, I pull on my socks. I listen to a podcast. I do. If you go away for 2 weeks, people are going to go listen to something else and then they're not coming back again. Like that's it. Like you had them, give them more of what they want. If you can't do that, you're not a podcaster. That's fine. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like you can have a hobby podcast. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You could get 50 downloads a month for the rest of your life and know that you're talking to 50 people. And I think that's really amazing. I genuinely mean that. If there are other diabetes, all right, look, I know a little bit about my business, but so I stopped tracking at 85, but there have been at least 85 type 1 diabetes podcasts that have started since mine began that are now defunct. So 80 defunct, gone. They don't make them anymore. So 85 people since 2015 January have said to themselves, I'm going to make a type 1 diabetes podcast. And then they went to all the effort. They bought a microphone and a computer and they put it online. That's not easy. You know, like you got to get a hosting service and do all this stuff. And now they don't make it anymore. Some of them made it a couple of episodes. Some of them put up their first episode. They're like, I'm going to make a podcast about this episode, then never make another one. Some people do it for a year and they stop. There was this one person, I really thought she was going to do it. And then all of a sudden she just stopped. And I'm going to tell you the secret. The secret is it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It is 5 o'clock today. You and I have been recording for over an hour. That's fine. I've already recorded today. I've also done voiceover for 2 different advertisers. I've had a meeting with a new advertiser. I researched social media platform software to put up my posts with. I've interacted with my group online a number of different times. I put out a fire on Facebook. Somebody did something crazy and Scotty had to throw some water on it before, you know what I mean? I put out a fire on Facebook. I've messaged with a dozen listeners. There's a guy who wants me to review his diabetes app. I talked to him today. I am going to, tomorrow's Saturday, I'm going to work tomorrow. I recorded with Jenny today. I recorded something today you're not going to hear for like a month and a half. But I recorded something yesterday you won't hear for 6 months. And next week, I record 1, 2, three, four, five times. The week after that, one, two, three, four, five, six times. The week after that, one, two, three, four, five, six times. Like, I'm busy. And if you want a thing that grows and is this big and covers as many bases as I do and offers entertainment inside, you know, interspersed mm-hmm. with the management stuff, it's a job. Like, it really is. You can't put out 10 and then go away for 4 months. That's a hobby you have. It's lovely. And I'm sure it helps people, but it's never going to scale.
Yeah.
You know, and I resist saying this a little bit, but I don't know the exact number, but somewhere around 48. I chart in 48 different countries. Like, I'm in the top 200 in Apple podcasts for medicine in about 48 different countries.
Insane.
It's nuts. And then I don't do it anymore because it's not important. It's not that I don't care, but I don't think about it anymore. And I could do it right now, but I won't. But there are no other diabetes podcasts that chart anywhere.
Yeah.
You know,
you're the only one that pops
up. It's the only one. But why is that? It's for so many different myriad. It's not because their podcasts aren't good. I've never listened to them, but I'm sure somebody likes them. I mean, they're making them. You know what I mean? And by the way, I don't not listen to them because it's not an insult. I've done this since I was a blogger. I didn't read other people's blogs. I didn't want my ideas to be tainted by other people's ideas. And I didn't want other people to feel like I was stealing from them. So I just don't listen to what anyone else is doing. And mm-hmm. I think that that's kind of important because groupthink can happen. Do you know what that is?
My God, we talked about that in humanities. I have notes on this.
You have notes on groupthink?
Yeah, okay. I'll pull them up.
Good, pull up your groupthink notes. But groupthink can start, right? So groupthink is a psychological phenomenon that occurs within a group of people in which the desire for harmony or conformity in the group results in an irrational or dysfunctional decision-making outcome. Yeah. There's groupthink in diabetes media, social media, right? Like, and I've broken through some of it in the past. It used to be you would not be allowed by the mob to share good news about your management. You couldn't share a good graph. You couldn't share a good A1C because, well, I don't have that. You're making me feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd said is lead by example. If I can do it, maybe you can do it. Like if I'm doing it, ask me how. You know what I mean? Like maybe I could tell you something that you don't know about. And so I think you share good news. You don't rub it in. You're not out there mm-hmm. being like, hey, everybody, guess what? My A1C is this and yours isn't. Go to hell. You say, look, like, you know, here's what I do. My kid's A1C is this. I think you could replicate that for yourself. Like be uplifting about it. But the space, while I was blogging, you were not allowed to say anything good that happened because people would come after you. Like, it wasn't, they weren't, you know, that the whole woke thing that went through in the last couple of years, like, that was powerful. But it wasn't like that. But it was a little bit. They'd shit talk you. They'd bad mouth you to each other, like, you know, behind the scenes. I mean, I've seen the diabetes community be incredibly uplifting to people. I've also seen it be horrible to people. Like, I've seen people go behind other people's backs and make them lose their jobs. I've seen people steal work from each other. I have seen people steal ideas from each other. There are plenty of diabetes influencers, health coaches who are listening to my podcast and repurposing my content and selling it to people. That happens. I can think of a number of people I know that have gone and gotten training for themselves from a trusted source and then took their notes and started their own coaching service and basically coach other people with someone else's thoughts. Like, that actually happens. I have stories that I can't tell you, but trust me, on the very last day of my podcast, whenever that ends up being, definitely tune in for when I tell stories about all the terrible people who I've seen do terrible things. I'm going to out them on the very last day and then run away. But seriously, you can, the space is interesting because it has the power to help people. But a lot of times people fall into either a money trap or a click trap. So either I'll share some of this information with you and then you'll pay me for my coaching service to get the rest of it, which is just a classic sales technique, which is not a thing I would do. Or you say something that you know makes people upset because it gets clicks and likes, and then you can sell the clicks and the likes.
Mm-hmm.
And these two things happen all the time. There's a very popular blogger who made a living back in the day off of just telling scary stories about diabetes. And I always thought that was shitty. Like, I always thought that was like, why would you scare people just to get them to read your blog so that a company would put a free device on you? I'm like, wow, what a horrible thing that is. You know what I mean? Like, say something uplifting once in a while. Or like, so they'd kind of like go after people's base instincts to get eyes. And then they'd sell those eyes, you know, in the form of like a free thing here or there. I'm very clear about what I do. I get a lot of people to listen to my podcast by helping them. And then I sell ads, and those ads, that income from those ads allows me to spend my day making the podcast. It's just the only way it works because I'm an adult. And if I'm not making money making a podcast, then I'm not making a podcast. I have to go get a different job. So anyway, like, people could do better. I just think that they sometimes lack the imagination about how to be helpful and profitable at the same time. Without getting captured and, you know, saying, you know, I don't know, only saying good things about certain products or shared and, you know, saying, you know, I don't know, only saying good things about certain products or stuff like that. So I don't know. What else? Are we done? Are you liking this? Is this boring you? Are you upset that you've done it? Where are we at right now? Sum up for me.
I don't have any questions left, but do you have any final words?
Can there be any words left?
Like a final message.
I mean, I've been doing this a long time, so there's a lot of stories. Peace on the street, power to the people. I don't know. Like, I just thought of something inappropriate. I can't say that to you. You're too young. I'm trying to think of your and if anybody finds me and asks me what I was just thinking of, I will never tell you. I just, these sayings just kept popping up in my head, and the one that just popped in was really terrible. Inappropriate. I don't know. I thought it was funny. Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're still listening to this, you got to get a hobby. We've been doing this for an hour and a half now. You should not have stayed this long. But if you're still listening and you have type 1 or you're the parent of somebody with type 1, It's kind of simple. It's timing and amount. It's, you know, having experiences, learning from them, not beating yourself up, keep up with good technology, you know, keep a stiff upper lip. This is hard. It's not going to get easier. You'll get better at it, which will make it seem easier, but it's not any easier. I was up last night at 2 o'clock in the morning helping with Arden with something, you know, and it didn't feel any easier. An algorithm will help you sleep. CGM is very important. Good food in gets better results out. You know, if your doctor's not helping you, get another one. I'm doing a series right now. I'm doing a couple series right now. One's called Grand Rounds, one called Cold Wind. Cold Wind is healthcare professionals are coming on anonymously. I'm changing their voice even so you can't even understand who they are. And they're telling stories about their jobs. Had an ER nurse with type 1 tell me that she would be safer having a seizure at my house than in the ER she works in. So if you think you're getting bad medical care, you may be. So, you know, I hate to say advocate for yourself because it sounds trite, but you got to advocate for yourself. You know, the Grand Rounds one is a nice series where we're talking to doctors about what people with type 1 need and what they deserve. Hopefully that'll be picked up by the medical community and listened to. Because I would very much like to leave a better world behind for people with type 1. That's my overall goal, is to help people in the moment today, day to day, episode to episode. But, you know, a podcast is, a podcast, social media in general, is like trying to keep a stone warm with a match. You know, so as long as you've got the match on the stone's hot, you can't touch it. But the minute you take the match away, the stone's stone cold. That's where that phrase comes from, right? Right. Same thing with this. If I'm making content, I'm relevant. If I'm doing a good job, people share it with other people. It goes out, it finds people, it helps other people. The minute I take my foot off the gas, that stops. And then one day, there's just this data out in the world that people can't find anymore that's all this amazing information about diabetes. I'd like to find a way to keep that going beyond my time. So I think one of the ways that'll happen is by reaching a whole new generation of people in the medical community who are thinking about endocrinology and helping people with diabetes. And I think another way is that I'm trying to find a way to use my information as a compendium and then attach it to some AI bot so that one day there'll just be a website where you can go ask diabetes questions and the answers will come out of the thousands and thousands of conversational hours from the podcast. But that's like my long-term goal. So again, peace on the street, power to the people. That's what I got. I got nothing else. I could talk for 5 hours. Who are we kidding? We should stop.
Okay.
I can't believe you didn't ask me 3 words.
Okay, I'll ask you 3 words real quick.
But you have the words written down?
No, I'll just think of them.
Well, what are we going to do? Are you going to pick like an adverb and an action word? And like, I don't know words. I didn't pay attention.
Objects.
Three objects?
Does it have to be like a verb and like a adverb? And
are you trying to prove that I don't know what a verb is? Because if that's what you're trying to do, if you're trying to embarrass me right now, I've already embarrassed myself by talking endlessly on your podcast. Okay. So I don't know. You just pick a couple of words, throw them out. I'll write them down as you say them.
A treadmill.
Okay.
Running. Wait, never mind. That's too easy.
Yeah.
That's too easy.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Swimming. And a jacket.
So now there's a couple of ways to go with this. I could tell you a story. I could literally make up a story. That would be no trouble at all. I could be thoughtful and talk about exercise. I think we could talk about I could probably do something about the Olympics. Let's see, the Olympics, exercise, thoughtful, funny, made up story. You pick, which do you want?
Let's do Olympics.
Olympics, okay. I would imagine that if I wanted to compete in the Olympics, it's too late for me because I'm old. But somewhere, some young person right now is saying to themselves, I'd like to swim in the Olympics one day. But they're only like 7 years old, right? So they don't even know what that means. But they look in the mirror and they see, I got long arms, right? I got long legs. I look like a manatee. You know what I mean? You know that? What's that swimming boy's name? With the big head. You're so young. You don't know anybody. Phelps. That's right. They look up, they say, I'm built like that Phelps fellow. He won all those Olympic medals. I think I could do this, right? So I think the first thing they want to do is get swimming lessons. This is obvious. But they're in terrible shape. They're like, oh, I know I'm never active. I don't know anything. I really want to swim. I'm going to go ask my mom for a treadmill, right? So I'm going to get this treadmill and I'm going to get myself in good cardiac, you know, a good way about me. And then I'm going to ask for swimming lessons. So I'm going to tell my mom, I need a treadmill because I need to get in good shape. And if I get myself in good shape, will you please pay for swimming lessons for me? And I get her to say yes, right? She says, I don't know, swimming lessons, they're pretty expensive. And I say, if it helps, I'll sell my favorite jacket to help pay for it. I will. But the mom says, no, keep your jacket. You need this jacket. I understand. So I get on the treadmill. I get in great shape. I ask for my swimming lessons. I start to swim. Now I'm getting good at it. I'm in these competitions, and this little kid is really coming along, swimming for the school. Next thing you know, they're in like some swim club thing. They got nose plugs, right? Because you swim, you want to keep your nose plug like that, right? Kid gets better and better and better at it. And one day, while he's swimming, he clunks his head into the side of the pool, goes over unconscious under the waves. You know what they throw at him? A life jacket. That's right. They throw a life jacket to him because they don't want him to drown, right? And then they jump in and they take him out. And he never goes to the Olympics. Because he has a concussion and now he's scared of the pool. This is a horrible story, but absolutely true. What do you think is... What?
You should write stories for kids.
There was this one day my daughter was in second grade and parents would come in and read a book. And I came in and I sat down and they were like, where's the book? And I said, I didn't bring a book. We're going to make up a story. And we made up a story about an alternate world where people, instead of putting their gifts under Christmas trees, put their gifts under sofas, but they still had to go out to sofa farms and bring them back home on the top of their car, the way you bring home a Christmas tree. Anyway, this went on for a long time. I don't really remember the salient details of it, but it was at the end of it, the teacher just looked at me and said, I should have recorded that. And I was like, yeah. She goes, go write it down. And I was like, I don't remember it. It's gone already. So I came back the following year and told a story. This pisses me off still. I came back the following year. I got to get the name of this for you. This is the last thing we're going to talk about. I came back the following year and I told this story about turkeys at Thanksgiving, right? I don't know what I was. And I went on and on about these turkeys and Thanksgiving. And I forget the whole thing I told you, but I told like this long story, but I made up this story. Like 2 years later, this movie called Free Birds came out. And I went to see it because my kids were young. It was an animated movie about turkeys and Thanksgiving. And as I was sitting there, Arden turns to me and goes, yo, you remember when you came to my school and told this story? And I was like, yeah. She goes, who knew it could have been a movie? And I was like, I know. This is very upsetting. I was very pissed when that happened. But anyway, I could write kids' books, but there's no money in it.
That'll be it today. Thank you so much for listening, and please consider following my Instagram account, Type1Takes. Bye.